But we still have to continue to focus on that, because no sooner does he get the papers handed in that there's another one that's missing. It's almost comical. You know, because, you know, I used to cringe every time I would look on the online portal, but now I just, like, say, okay, whatever it is, let's do, we're just going to address it, so, and going forward. So, sort of like a challenge, and it was a celebration, but just tonight, I mean, it's almost the end of the quarter, and he's missing one of their assignment, and it's a zero right now, and you know, was struggling. It was something that was done online at school, and he says he finished it. I believe him that he did it, but we can't find it in Google Docs. And he said he shared it with the teacher, and the teacher says he doesn't have it. So I'm kind of like, I'm at a loss as to what to do. And I don't want the kid to fail the class because right. He did the work.
But prior to this, he wasn't turning in anything. Is that right?
No, he was. He was just okay. Missing, but he was getting zeros for it, you know.
Ah, uh-huh.
So, I mean, when it's not handed in, it's a zero. And one of his classes, they don't take points off if it's late, which is good. The other class does, which I don't know if I should be talking to the teachers about that at all with his IEP or whatever, but anyhow, I was just happy that he handed it in, because it was in two of his classes, in social studies and science.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, you've been taking aim on schoolwork, turning it in and making sure it got in, and we're having some success, but not as much as you'd like. So that's still an area of opportunity.
That's correct.
All right. Cool. Awesome. Thank you. Marianne, what's been going on with you?
Well, I just had my son's parent-teacher conferences tonight, so it's exciting.
Ah.
But prior to that, my
Yay.
Yeah. Well, actually, then I get to do – I'm a teacher, so I do parent-teacher conferences for the next three nights myself, so I get the other side, so it's fine.
That's always fun.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting. But actually, what we were taking in from 2 weeks ago was initiating – well, initiating anything, but between my son and I, we decided initiating a couple of specific chores at home, because he seemed to think those were the most sort of low-hanging fruit for him. Initiating anything is very difficult for him, and it usually requires an adult on some level to get him started, and he resents that. So that's what he'd been working on. So a couple of specific chores, and we've had some success with initiating. I had to let go of the finishing because he gets distracted, but we've had some good success with initiating a few of the chores that we had, he and I had worked on together. And then he kept track of whether or not I reminded him, because I wasn't supposed to. So I got better at not reminding him, and he got better at initiating the couple that we had decided very specifically. So that was good.
Awesome. So what do you think made the difference in terms of initiating for him?
Well, we'll see if it lasts. I think it was a very narrow focus. You know, it was there were manual labor type things, which is a little more concrete. We worked on, you know, I always kind of get him to do the what's in it for you part when we make these decisions together about how this is going to help, because it was driving us both nuts. I mean, it drives us both nuts that I have to remind him that he needs to be reminded. So he's old, you know, he's a senior in high school. So we're still working on this stuff. And I keep, you know, saying what's in it for you is not to have somebody following you around or feeling badly when it doesn't get done. So anyway, I think it was very narrowly focused was probably the best thing. And that part that he got to keep track of, I did my end of the bargain, which was not around those couple of things, just not even mentioning it. He used his, you know, he had to use his strategy. So.
Gotcha. So you guys kind of held each other accountable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Teenagers are tough, man. I know you know that. Hard
yep.
to find ways to support them with and you know, respect their identity and their becoming. And it's something you guys are doing a great
mm-hmm.
job. Awesome. So, okay, so just the two or the three of us. So we can do probably a shorter session if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Unless people join in. But the topic tonight, let's see, on page 17 in the workbook, we're talking about parenting mm-hmm. positively. And if you look at the parenting action model. Parenting positively or parent positively is one of the critical response areas. And, you know, typically the parents that work with us, this is a no-brainer, right? This is something we all want to be able to do better, and we know that it's important. And if we look at positive psychology, you know, we know that positive praise and positive reinforcement is a good thing. And what we focus on with a, you know, positive attitude tends to be what grows. And some recent studies, I'm sure you guys have heard these numbers before, but say that parents should have a 3-to-1 positive to negative statement ratio with respect to their kids in order to just maintain equilibrium, right? So anytime you say, I picked that up or you forgot that, you need to have 3 separate instances where you're praising them or finding areas where they're doing things right. And actually, to improve things, they're saying that you need to have a 5-to-1 ratio, which causes me to panic sometimes because
yeah.
I think about all the things that, you know, it's hard, right? It's hard. Some days you feel like mm-hmm. you're correcting your kids all the time, whether they're older or younger or whatever their ages are. And you know that at school they're getting it too. And so trying to stay positive is a challenge, right? It's one of those things that makes the biggest impact, I think, on our relationship with our kids is our ability to stay positive. And I think it's also the hardest. What are some things that get in the way for you guys of parenting positively?
Well, I know sometimes when I get triggered, and I just get annoyed, and I have to just stop and take a minute to just think about, like, just not react. Like tonight, I mean, I wasn't positive. I'm typically not a, you know, I'm usually the more positive one in the fam in out of, you know, my husband and I. But I was just so frustrated because I've been asking him, you know, a couple times about this missing thing, and you know, and I just reacted, you know. So you have to, that's what happens. You just reacted. You don't think, at least in my situation.
Yeah. And so, what's that about? Do you think?
Well, it's how I, before actually I started joining these calls and reading up on all of this, it was just the way you just get frustrated. It's not knowing what to do. It's not knowing how to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
No. And not being able to help out your child. So that's where the frustration comes from.
Mm-hmm. Marianne, what about you?
I think probably the two things are, unfortunately, I was a teacher for much longer than I was a parent to start. And often that's always looking at where things are going well, but also what needs to be sort of addressed next. And that's sort of my general method, which isn't always, even if I don't mean it negatively, it can be perceived like we're always working on something. So that's hard. I've had to really work hard on not doing that. That's getting better. But the second thing I find difficult is trying to find things that don't sound so patronizing that I can say are positive. I know that sounds awful, but especially as a teenager, you know, especially as a teenager, there's a lot of times he's either not with me or doesn't want to be with me, which is normal. I mean, you know, you don't want your mom like following you around. So that's fine. But what typically happens for me is I'll get whatever negative is going on with him. I or my husband gets the call from whatever adult is dealing with him. He's a difficult kid on a lot of levels. So it's hard to not be in crisis mode when other people are trying to put us in even more crisis mode than we are. I mean, there's very little I can do about what he's doing outside of school sometimes or whatever. So that sort of is hard for me to not get trapped in constantly putting out fires because that's what I could be doing pretty much all the time. So that's the harder thing for me right now is to let so much go that I agree with these people that some of these things are huge problems, but I can only deal with what I can deal with at a time. And if I just focus on those, it really is almost impossible to be positive, much less five times more positive than negative. So, and with a boy, an 18-year-old boy, they're not so big on the praise. I mean, you got to be careful about how you do the praise too, because it's not that not everybody doesn't enjoy praise, but you know, I have to be careful that it's not, you know, just grasping at straws for something positive.
It's not contrived.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So it's sort of trying to get a balance of that has been difficult. But I really spend a lot of time trying to figure out, like, when can we have time that at least we both don't have pressure of something having to be done, or, you know, there has to be an agenda. And that's been probably the thing that's helped the most. But so in those instances, it's better, you know, the sort of being with him sometimes is okay.
I love that. Tell me more about that. What do you mean, finding times together where you don't have an agenda?
After church, sometimes I'll just say, well, I don't know, we'll just go for a ride, or we'll, even though we have like 8,000 things we're supposed to be doing, or he and I both enjoy singing a lot. He's actually a good musician. So, you know, I actually volunteered to take the drive. He's a tuba player too, so I volunteered to drive all the giant instruments down for a big band competition. So he and I were in the car together. Actually, he wanted to be there. So it was just sort of sitting and being, but, it, you know, he'll talk, and then there's at least some things that I can, I don't know, we could just have some interactions, or go for, once in a while he'll allow me to go for a walk with him or a bike ride, but mostly it's around in the car these days because that's his big, you know, driving's a big deal. So we get some time then. Even actually doing some things together, he and I enjoy it when it snows, we enjoy snowboarding, so maybe I'll find some time, you know, sitting on the ski lift and doing that. But honestly, just these days, finding like 20 minutes cooking together, anything, just anything where we're both engaged in a task, not looking at each other, is huge.
I hear you, because you're never home, right?
Well, not being home and not facing him or having to get something done, just sort of doing it together, just cause that's what's in front of us, laundry, whatever. Some of that's been a good time, but I have to really plan it or it doesn't happen.
And I like what you said earlier about letting go and being able to, you know, only focus on what you can focus on, because if you try to focus on too many things, you're just going to lose it.
Yeah, but it's brutal. It's brutal. I say that, but it's not easy at all. And, you know, when psychiatrists are calling me saying they don't know what to do with him, it's a little concerning. But I just have to keep saying, well, you know, I got to go home tonight, so I'll figure out something, and we'll, you know, try not to just focus on. I mean, I yeah, clearly I have to deal with some things, but I really have to be careful about it, or I will go absolutely crazy.
I take it
out on him. So.
Right. We can't do that. What's the story you're telling yourself when that happens, when a psychiatrist calls and says, I don't know what to do? What's going on inside you?
I think my first reaction has always, my natural reaction has always been, I'm now supposed to do something to fix this. And now sort of my first response is, instead of oh I'm sorry, or either apologizing or I don't know, like I'm supposed to fix it, now I just sort of, my first response is, I'll have to think about that, I don't know either, because usually I don't, or I'll have to think about it, or you know, whatever. But then I just have to tell myself, I have been so exhausted and trying to deal with so much that I can no help anybody. I've already gotten to that point in the past, so I just keep saying, well, you've gotten this far and nobody's died, and we figure, you know, we'll have to, sometimes just waiting it out and doing nothing, you know, depending what it is, of course. Or sometimes I just think, well, you're like the, I don't know, eighth or ninth therapist that's told me this, so, okay, you have good company, you know. And then I try to say, sometimes I'll say to them, well, if you did know what to do, what would you think? And they sometimes come, oh, well, we could try whatever. I don't know. It depends on the person. But mostly I have to just say to myself, this isn't fixable. And if there's especially a clinician telling me they're not sure what to do, I shouldn't feel badly that I don't either. So we'll just keep them safe and move on. I mean, I don't know what else to do at this point. But same with the school. You know, if it's a school, my husband and I will come get him if we have to. You know, if it's to a point where he's really starting to disintegrate, my husband and I will go get him. And then I just won't deal with it at all for a little bit until he can come down, and I used to try to be like, well, let's try to fix all of this and what happened and everything, and now it's sort of like, how can I help you become, you know, stable enough to return? That's sort of it, when you can tolerate to go back. And that's better than trying to make a whole plan, you know, about going back. It's just like, what do you need to be stable enough to go back, like, whenever you think that's going to happen? And that's sort of where we are now. So I just try to think short-term, immediate, and I'm not probably going to fix it mid-term, so...
No, I love that. I mean, you're absolutely right that you've had this, would you say it's like a perspective shift, where you're thinking about what does he need, or what does he need to be successful, or what can I help him see or provide for him to help him get back in the game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as opposed to fixing it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a huge transition, because I think a lot of times as parents, you know, we're fixers, right? We want to get in there and solve the problem. That's what we do. But
oh, yeah, it's brutal. But
it is brutal. Yeah, no, it absolutely is, and I applaud you. That's a huge shift. I mean, to go from I can fix it, I can take care of this, or to apologize to what does my son need, and to, okay, well, that's your opinion, and we're going on from there. I think that's great. So one of the things that we're talking about getting triggered, Carol, and you know, we can't really do much of anything when we get triggered. And one of the things that I like about what you said, Marianne, is that it sounds like you made the transition from getting triggered to kind of stepping out of that stress cycle and figuring out a way to become kind of calm and confident. Because, you know, as you guys know already, when we get triggered, it's like an amygdala hijack. That's what Elaine called it. And our primitive brain takes over, and our cortisol is going, and we get in that fight or flight mode, and it's just impossible to make any rational decisions or to speak calmly or confidently. And you know, it's important in those scenarios. And it sounds like that's what you do, Marianne. Is, you know, you recognize that you're triggered, right? And that's the first step.
Yeah, I am.
Recognizing you're triggered, say, okay, you know, now this is not about what's going on with my son. This is about what's going on with me, because I'm upset. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, whatever you are doing in terms of reclaiming your brain, taking a time out or taking some deep breaths or kind of walking yourself through whatever the path is that gets you to where you need to be, that's awesome. Some people, like, you know, leave the room or run around the house or, you know, do push-ups. whatever.
Yeah, mostly deep breaths.
Deep breaths are fabulous for that, as long as you exhale, well,
I can do that pretty much everywhere, so that's sort of deep breath. But it really is, this next step is really like, right, I can probably figure out what to do in the next 5 minutes. Like, I just have to look at it that, or the next minute and a half. Like, I mean, I really have to look little bits, because my natural reaction is, oh, my God, this kid is never going to, and then it's like his whole life, and I just can't deal. So I sort of just look at, okay, I could probably deal with the next 5 minutes of this and work from there.
No, I love that, because what you're doing is you recognize that that's the story that you're telling yourself, right? That your brain is automatically going to go there. And so you stop it, and then you reframe it, right? Mm-hmm. Then you reframe it to...
That's not all the time, but it's much more of the time now. I mean, my son still is not handing things in. You know, he'll do it not hand in. We've been having this problem since whenever. So I had to sort of let that go of, like, okay, I can get that upset about it now. And, you know, we've tried different things. We'll keep trying it. But, I mean, that's not a crisis mode. It's just aggravating. And I have to work on not getting aggravated about that stuff. And that kind of stuff I can easily now say to people, well, I guess he's going to have to work something out about that, because I've done everything I can to help him. And until he decides, because he's so much older at this point, he decides that that's a priority and that he wants to use, I'll be more willing to help him. But until he dives into that being a priority, there's not a whole lot of... Mm-hmm.
So you're adjusting to follow his priorities right now.
Yeah, and it's killing me, but I'm doing it.
But you know what's great about that is that you're...
He has to start doing that. You have to do that. I can't see myself doing that just right now.
But what if you were, I mean, and I don't know if that's what your son needs, Carol, but, you know, what if that was what he needed in order to be successful or in order to turn in the assignments? What if you knew from the get-go that he needed you to be on the same page with him in terms of his priorities? How would that change your approach?
How would it change my approach if
Go ahead.
Felt, no, I'm trying to
reflect on it. So I want to make sure I understand the question.
Oh, perfect. Talk out loud.
So if his priority was something else, how would that change how – I guess it would depend how I feel about it and how I would address it. So I guess it would – well, I guess I need to have a conversation with him to understand what his priorities are. I mean, he doesn't want to get – I mean, he brought up his grades from a 55 to a 69, okay, by handing in these documents. And he will likely get it up into the 70s if he gets this last zero in. I know he doesn't want to fail the class. I mean, I know that he doesn't want that. So if he has some other priority, I guess, I would want to know what it is. I would want to talk to him. Because, you know, maybe if there's something else that makes more sense that I'm somehow missing, then, you know, then I would address that. And then I wouldn't get so hung up on all these other things. But, you know, there's going to be consequences to his, you know, failing a class.
And what goes on in your mind when you're thinking about the consequences for him for failing?
I don't want him to fail, and I don't want this to follow him, because he's a smart kid, and I do believe that there are things that we can probably do to help him to hand in these things, because it's not happening all the time, it's just happening some of the time, so there's something clearly, this is a new teacher, teaches differently, there's probably something going on in the classroom that is consistently, it's in that classroom. It's not happening in the other classrooms. So
he's turning it in that classroom, or he's not turning it in that classroom?
In this classroom, he's not. Like, he's there's a lot of missing assignments.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not everything. It's just some of them. But what I mean is it's not in all of his classes that he's missing something.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, part of it is it's probably harder, the work, too.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, the stuff that's easier, he does. But, and we recently, the other thing is we recently upped his medication because we had his assessments done. And he's gotten older. Like, his medication hasn't changed in, I think, like 3 years. And he had a growth spurt last year, too. I mean, so.
But you've been curious. You've been finding things that needed to be adjusted to help him activate his brain or to be able to engage, better engage at school or at home.
Yeah. And
right?
I think there we are more opportunities. I don't think we're at the end of our, I mean, we're just beginning. We're all just figuring out how to, I mean, even my daughter just the other day was like, because I share with them all these articles that I'm doing. I'm like, she was so excited. She came up. She goes, "You can be so proud of me." This is because she's like, it's a family thing, right? So she was having it was almost like she was like a referee between my husband and my son. And my son is a scout, and he went away on a camping trip, and he came back, and he had to fold his sleeping bag. And my husband's saying it has to be done this way, and my son is saying, no, it's got to be done this way. And he's getting to the point where he's closing down, and he doesn't want to do anything. And so my daughter took him aside, and she said, so, you know, she talked to him and said, so, Javier, what do you want to do with the sleeping bag? And, you know, well, would like to fold it this way. And, she listened to what he said, and then she said, well, what if you did it Daddy's way, and then you did it your way, and then you evaluated it afterwards? Would you be okay with, and then, he was like, yeah, I would. And so then she went downstairs and then told my husband.
Said the same thing.
This is what Javier wants to do, and then Javier went down and, you know, and then talked to him. So she sort of like paced him and said, this is what we're going to be doing. So at least wouldn't get, you know, he wouldn't react, right? And then, and it worked. And he ended up like, you know, I don't know how it ended up, like they folded it my husband's way or his way, but at least got through it and had the whole thing. And she was just so excited all about it. So,
awesome.
I know that there
are.
That's not why I said that. I think it's because I know that there are other ways that there's plenty of things that we can do with him.
Right.
He's just the tip of the iceberg.
But that worked, right? I mean, back to what you were saying earlier about, you know, or I guess what I was saying earlier, suggesting about priorities or figuring out what his priorities are. I mean, your daughter saw that, you know, he wanted to fold it the way he wanted to, right? And yet she was able to approach him from a positive standpoint and suggest kind of an alternative and a compromise that sounds like it worked out great.
It did. And the sleeping bag got folded and put away.
One of the things that I think is hard, and we're going to do a whole session on shifting expectations, is with folding. You know, parenting positively, and you know, whenever we turn those chores and household things over to our kids, being able to kind of let go of it, right? Because they're doing it.
Yeah.
And they may not be doing it the exact way we want it done, but they're doing it. So
yeah.
We asked. So, sorry, I got a little bit off on a tangent there with the folding.
Yeah. Yeah, but as far as it's hard for me to accept that he's not, like, he would fail a class. I mean, it's just because I know he's capable of more, and he just has to work on some, like, I'm still focusing on taking aim and just, like, just doing these little steps because we still need to work on it. And there's my parent-teacher conferences haven't come yet, so I'm waiting to see if the quarterlies are just happening they happened last week and this week, and so then, I mean, I guess it's going to happen soon, maybe next week.
Mm-hmm.
So.
It sounds like you're still, not still, but you're in the education phase. I mean, you're still kind of investigating and staying really curious about what's mm-hmm. going on, trying to figure out what's driving him and you know, what approach works for him, and playing with medication as a structure or a system and a support to help him do better or help him, you know, activate his brain in the way that's going to help him to be more successful at home and at school. And so by, you know, staying positive through this process, it sounds like you're going to be able to find some stuff that's going to be helpful as we move into the next phase. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
What were you going to say, Marianne?
I was just going to offer that when my son was in middle school, one of the classrooms started using Google Docs, which on one hand was, like, awesome because it's all right there at home and at school, and there's less of backpack syndrome. But it was incredibly distracting for him, and it took him a while. Once he was on a computer, it was the uploading it and the doing it and not flipping back and forth was very hard for him. And I noticed a huge downturn for a while, and most of the Google Docs stuff involved writing for my son. So I at one point, just found out that he was on purpose not handing things in, saying it wasn't handed in because he was so stressed out by the whole process. But it took a long time for me to get there. You know, he just kept saying, oh, I forgot. But it turned out that it was the combination of the distraction of a computer and the more writing-intensive stuff tended to be on Google Docs. And those two things together were deadly. But it took me the better part of a year to figure that out with him. That may or may not be relevant in this case, but I would say that the switch to Google Docs for him was in terms of distracting and how to figure out how to manage that.
Yeah,
there
may be something there because it is Google Docs that they're on at school, and he says he's been working on it, and but we don't see any indication of it on our end. But I don't know how this thing works. I mean, I don't know if he saved it someplace else or maybe he really didn't work on it. You know, I don't know. But I can't – but this wasn't a one-and-done thing. Apparently they were working on it since the beginning of school. So,
yeah.
You know, it's a chapter's worth of information. Mm-hmm. So – And it's not the first time he's been on Google Docs, though. They started last year on it, so I don't know. But it is much more intensive this year, and writing is harder for him. So,
It's just in terms of being curious about what else can be going on by middle school and whatever. I would talk to the teacher because you should be able to have access at home and at school. So maybe you'd be able to see that, just to see. Sometimes it's so hard at that age.
Great suggestion.
Well, we do have access to it. I mean, he logged into his school.
So if you talk to the teacher about how they're doing it, it saves automatically. They don't have to press save. That's another good thing about it. But you can actually go on. I wouldn't necessarily do this with him in front of you, but you can actually go on and see when he was on and what was done, what was edited, wasn't edited, what was the rate. You can actually go back and trace all that in Google Docs. I wouldn't do it in front of him because it's really kind of invasive on one level, but it might be interesting if you talk to the teacher. So just informational for you to be able to see what has been going on his account, see if he is, you know, what's happening. Because maybe you'll see a lot of writing and erasing, which is what was happening with my son when I looked and with the teacher. He had written paragraphs and then erased the entire paragraphs, I think, out of frustration, but I don't know. I guess the big thing is to find out from the teacher how that was handled, but maybe he's overwhelmed or something. It's always that curious part of what else is going on.
Yeah, it's amazing what we find out when we get curious. It looks like someone else has joined us, and I apologize if you joined us a little bit ago and I missed you. Who joined us from Georgia? Probably have us on mute.
So, Marianne, I'm going to add, while we're waiting for that other person to talk. So, Marianne, I wanted to ask, so how do you find out on the Google Docs? Because that's interesting. That would be really good for me to see if, is there a certain section? Is there something to look
for? As long as you, whatever document he's you need to log in as him or with the teacher, and whatever document he's supposed to have been keeping this on, you can actually trace the history if you go. There's a history. If you just go to help and history, you can see the history of the document, which includes everything.
Would you post that in the Facebook group for us, Marianne?
Sure.
If you get a chance,
I'll do that.
Great.
I have a little mini video on how to do it.
Yeah. The YouTube video, that'd be awesome. I mean, I guarantee that if you have questions about it, Carol, there's probably a ton of people who also have questions about it, and I know that Google Docs can be challenging, so that'd be great if you wouldn't mind sharing that, Marianne. That'd be awesome.
I'll just make a note to myself and I'll do that.
That'd be great. Thank you. Okay. Who's joining us from Georgia? Can you hear me?
Yep, it's me. It's Michelle.
Michelle?
Yes.
Hello, how are you? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I'm not sure if I got my buttons on my phone working right. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, yeah. So you joined us about 10 or 15 minutes ago, it looks like?
It's probably about 5 minutes ago, really.
About 5 minutes ago, okay. I'm glad you're here. We're talking about parenting positively and talking about keeping ourselves from getting triggered and some ways to do that, and then also talking about how important it is to stay positive with our kids because, you know, our relationship with our sons and daughters with ADHD and all of our sons and daughters, really, is really the most important thing. And, you know, there was a time when one of my kids got a C in, I don't even remember, it was, I think, English, and I was devastated. You know, I was convinced that his career, his life, his college choices were completely ruined. And, you know, as we grow in parenting and find new ways to approach our kids and approach their futures and stay positive, I learned that, you know, that C is probably one of the least important things that's going to happen in his life. And that the way I had handled that situation was so badly, that we needed a lot of work to come back from that. And so overall, staying positive and figuring out a way to approach our kids without being triggered and from a position of calm and confidence is really one of the best things that we can do for our kids. And so when we talk about parenting positively, what's bringing up for you or what's coming up for you?
trying to not find all of the trigger points all in like a matter of 5 minutes, I think. We're still working on basic things like getting out of bed and getting to bed. That's part of the reason why I signed on late, because we were sitting up doing our homework, you know, and it's trying to get that the chore of getting our teeth brushed and into bed. It just drags on forever, every night, and it's hard not to get frustrated.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. What's going on in your mind when you're having to remind him or keep driving him from room to room?
Well, I try to not start yelling, you know, because I realize it just causes a meltdown on both of our parts and we don't get anywhere. But, you know.
Good. That's good.
Just try to keep the process moving, but, you know, it's difficult to keep a cool head when you have a lot to get done and they're getting to bed later and later and not getting what they're supposed to get accomplished.
So, you know, a lot of times it can be a couple things. And how old is he again?
He is 10.
You know, sometimes they're getting something out of the delay, right? There's some kind of attention or gratification that they're getting from pushing your buttons or from taking more time with this and with that. And, you know, for the most part, our kids want to do well, right? For the most part, they're, you know, with rare exceptions, I'd say, they're not really trying to be bad. It's that whole naughty or neurological thing. So that might be something to get curious about. Is there something that he's getting out of that that he needs?
There are times where he will.
Go ahead. Uh-oh, Michelle, I lost you.
Well, there are times when, yes, I heard another voice talking. There are times where he'll look at me and he goes, well, you know, Mom, everything you say, I'm going to do the exact opposite. And he smiles.
Mm-hmm. And what do you say?
I said, I kind of figured that out. It's like, why do you do that? And he goes, just because. I'm your son.
Ah. So what do you think he's looking for there?
It's, again, going back to making everything a game, you know, some sort of competition, some kind of thing that he can win at.
Mm-hmm. So what if, and you already know that it's a game, what if you didn't play?
If I ignore him, nothing will get done.
And so what would happen then?
No, I would get a bunch of incompletes, and he probably would be up all night.
And?
I don't know. It's just always, it's a game of chess that never ends. If I try to get him to do something, he'll position himself another way. And, you know, and if I ask him to sit at the table and do his homework, he'll be on the floor. And I ask him to get up and get up, you know, to the table, and he'll be crawling on the floor. I mean, it's just anything but what he's supposed to be doing. And a lot of it is just to get a reaction of some sort. And we're trying very, very hard not to fly off the handle. I'm a little bit better at it than my husband is, because he has a short temper with him, because he's just, at some point, you just get like, okay, enough is enough. Quit playing games. Let's get this done. And then a bunch of shouting and yelling starts happening, you know, and then everybody stomps off to the end of the house.
Right.
And then, you know, I end up playing mediator. And then finally, eventually, things get done. But away, much more time has passed than what should have taken to get it done. So I'm trying to get things reined in a reasonable amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's nothing more stressful than the morning routine, right? When you've got to get out the door and be somewhere on time, and it's very stressful, very hard to manage that. And our kids know that to some extent. But, you know, what if you knew going in that you were going to have to tell him 15 or 20 times to get out of bed or to brush his teeth? How would that impact
or have,
Well, I do do that, you know, and I am standing right there, you know, and I go into work with wet hair because I'm standing on him. If I don't do that, we will not get out the door. And it's hard when my husband travels and I have to deal with everything myself, you know, and still accomplish that. But, you know, and keep going in his room. And like I said, I think we joked around last time, like, it's become a game now. I have to actually physically pull him out of bed. And he laughs and giggles about it, just to get him, his physical body out of the bed.
Mm-hmm. So you know that he responds well to games, right? And it sounds mm-hmm. like, it's, I mean, you're staying positive while you're doing this, right?
Well, we could stay pretty positive through all that type thing. It's when he starts talking back, you know, and he's started doing that quite a bit as well, too. And that, you know, you can only drop the rope so much, and then it becomes a respect issue, which, you know, I think deep down he does have a respect, but he's just kind of going over the line now, you know, and he, if you try to reprimand him on anything, he'll start raising his voice and, like, he's correcting me or his father.
Uh-huh.
Just that is part of it is concerning. And we don't know how to shut that down.
What goes on in your mind? Like, what are you telling yourself, or what story is in your head when he starts talking back to you guys?
Like, I never would have done talk back to my mother or father that way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that goes more through my husband's head. And my husband has said that to him a number of times. You know, or, you know, you need to have more respect than that. And you know, he just, you can't get a word in edgewise. If you start talking, he'll start getting upset and say, you're talking over me. Let me finish. He takes on, like, he tries to take on, like, he's the adult.
Uh-huh.
And you can either get mad, you know, and start, you know, threatening to discipline him and all that, which just makes it worse.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, and try to not lose your cool and try to redirect him till you're blue in the face.
Mm-hmm.
It's just become to the point, it's come to a head now where he's getting really, really mouthy.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not quite sure how to handle it.
So are we taking aim, and I think we talked about this last time, are we taking aim on the talking back, or are we taking aim on the getting out of bed or getting into bed?
Well, it's anything that, you know, he's asked to do that he doesn't do starts that chain of events.
Okay.
So it's kind of all lumped
morning?
Together. It'd be all day long. Yes.
So, and we like to pick one thing to focus on, because if we focus on the whole day, it's harder to identify when we get some success, and it's harder to get
I guess it would just be whenever, you know, he's pressed to do something that he doesn't want to, and then he starts to argue or, you know, gets really defensive, I struggle to remain calm and keep
okay.
trying to direct him when I feel like I'm not making any progress.
Gotcha. So it's about keeping yourself calm while you're trying to get into the next step.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. So, and just kind of a brief recap, and we were talking about this earlier with Carol. One of the things about, you know, being stressed out or triggered is that it makes it very difficult to do anything, right? And
mm-hmm.
we have a four-step plan, basically, to help you when you know you're triggered. And the first thing, it sounds like you've already got down cold, is that you recognize that you're triggered, right? So you recognize you're triggered, and you take a deep breath, and you say, okay, I'm going to remove myself from the situation, take a time out, and that can be, you can take the time out by staying in the same room. Some people drink water, and they find that having a glass of water helps them calm down and helps them recenter. Other people, we talked about doing push-ups or running up and down the stairs or, you know, just stepping away until you get back to a place where you're no longer triggered. I'm sure you've seen this before. My kids do this all the time. okay, I'm calm now. And it's only been about 30 seconds. I'm ready to talk now. No, you're not ready yet. It's only been 30 seconds. So make sure you give yourself enough time to settle back down. And then figure out what you're telling yourself that's making you triggered, right? What's the story that's going on in your brain? Kind of like what you were saying about, I would never talk to my parents that way. You know, your value is in conflict with what's going on with your son. And then figure out a way to reframe that, right? So make up a story that works for you. So with, I would never talk to my parents that way. Maybe it's, I am doing the best I can for my son to teach him how to be respectful. I have his best interest in my heart. How is that?
And I do think that. I mean, I do think that. That's part of what I try to do to keep cool. But at the same time, you're looking at the clock and you have things that have to be done.
Sure, no, I get it.
That escalates the situation.
Right. And that's the hardest part of that, right? And that's the, you know, step four is taking action based on that new story. and it's hard. I mean, sometimes you're in conflict with what your kids need to be, you know, what in your mind your kids need to be successful and what actually needs to happen. And sometimes the dishes just aren't going to get out of the dishwasher, or sometimes you're not going to get out the door on time.
Most of the time we don't.
That's not always okay. Yeah.
No, we can't be too late for school, you know, 4 days out of five out of the week. I mean, it's getting to that point where it really throws a wrench into everything. It sets the tone for the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I hear you. There's a lot going on there. But staying positive throughout it and not being triggered when you're talking and working through those situations with your son is the most important thing that you can do, because that helps retain that relationship, you know, so he knows that you're coming from a place of love and honor, and you know that too, because there's nothing more damaging to parents internally than yelling all the time. And I know that's not the way any of us want to be. It happens. You know, we're all human, so give yourself a big hug and forgive yourself for the times that you did yell. But take the next step and figure out what needs to happen to keep yourself from getting triggered.
Well, it's not just me. It's to calm my husband down, because he gets triggered a whole lot easier than I do.
Right. But we're talking about you right now. He's got to take care of himself.
But that's another big source of conflict there, though.
Sure.
You know, where the other person will jump in, you know, and when I'm trying to have a calm approach, and then my husband, do I need to come over there with a paddle, or do we need to do this, or, you know, do we need to come in? You know, it's that kind of trying to keep him out of it, without starting like another argument, a side argument there, and still get accomplished what needs to be. That's the difficulty.
Mm-hmm. So it's a conversation that you and your husband have to have, right? To figure out who's going to be in charge of this part, who's going to be in charge of that part, and then stay out of each other's way until you figure out what's working, and then expand.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, after we just keep trying all these things and nothing seems to be working consistently, that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. It may be that we need to talk a little bit after the call, or maybe we need to have a sanity session and see if we can't get some more specific stuff figured out. Those are free. We have lots of clients who need a little extra support outside of the session. So if you want to, go on the website, or I can send you a link, or put the link in the group, and schedule a sanity session, and we can get real specific about mornings or kind of whatever, wherever we think we want to start.
Well, we're just getting started. So, I mean, I know that, you know, we're trying to identify one specific thing, but it's these two things that seem to be intertwined, and it's just trying to get the process going. keep it moving along without resorting to all that and somebody being triggered, I guess.
And what?
And someone being triggered, whether it be him or me or my husband. It's never a smooth transition from one thing to another for I don't care what it is, even if it's getting ready for something that he wants to do, it's still, you know, getting ready, get out the door and get going. You could hold an ice cream cone in front of him and he'd still be dilly-dallying with something else.
So I mean, it sounds to me like that you're also staying curious, kind of like what Carol was saying earlier. You know, we're still in a place where we're trying to figure out what's really going on there, right? And what's really going to make a difference. And it may take several weeks before we figure it out. How do you feel about that?
We've tried everything we could think of ourselves. That's why I'm here. See if I can come up with any new avenues.
Well, I think that's it. I think focusing on or taking aim on one specific challenge area, and I know it's everything, but just humor me. And maybe take aim on the mornings. I know that's an area that's really stressful for you too, and you're there the majority of the time, right?
Yes.
And so, on the mornings where you don't get triggered, just make a mental note or jot down the things that happen. And it may not be something that's repeatable every day, but it may be.
Okay.
You know, good.
This is Carol. I was our morning routines. I don't do the morning routines as it, but setting up like morning routines can be really, you know, very complex because a lot of things that need to be done from the kid rolling out of bed, like getting out of bed, walking to the bathroom. Like brushing their teeth and going to the bathroom and walking out, going in the room, literally breaking it down into individual steps. And I know that for us, we sort of, like I had a grease board and I would literally write down everything on the grease board, what needs to be done. So at least it was a visual reminder. And trying to set up structures so that way the morning was a little more efficient. So making sure lunches were made and making sure clothes were picked out, making sure they go into bed early so that they can get up refreshed and doing all these things. And we're still constantly revising it and doing it, but trying to, you know, rolling out of bed and going into the bathroom, and after just like doing, you know, only having to go in his room two times as opposed to five times, well, that was success because he had to go in twice, or, you know, and maybe he got changed without me having to, us saying, get changed, you know, but literally maybe breaking it down so you feel like that, like you're making some progress. It sounds like it's frustrating.
That's a great question.
Well, I feel like we make some progress, and then we end up taking two steps back right away. If we make a game out of something, and then it'll be a competition, and then he'll get up, and he'll be eager to get up and time himself, see how quickly that he can do this or do that or do this and from one step to the other, and that'll go for a period of 2 weeks, and then he's done with that game. You know, and then we're back to our old routine again, and we're struggling to come up with something new to try to stimulate him to get him to do something. But as far as he wears a uniform every day and he'll have a particular shirt, and he'll have particular his shorts or whatever, and everything's laid out the evening before, but inevitably he'll find something, the collar's not right on the shirt, or from the exact same kind of shorts, something's not right with this short, and so we have to change him to another pair of identical shorts. I mean, he just always finds something. You know, and before it would be tags on clothes, those are all gone. It would be seams on socks, you know, or a particular kind of socks are too high or too low. Now everything is identical, so that we can't have that kind of argument, but there always seems to be find something.
You know, maybe he's trying to personalize it because he does have to wear a uniform.
No, this is just more of being, you know, can't get the underwear tucked in the shorts right, and so he's fidgeting around with his pants, and then he can't get his shirt tucked in right. I don't know if it's a sensory thing or what it is.
I just think we're trying to figure out still what he's getting out of that. You know, what need is he trying to fill? Or maybe we can, you know, flip that around to what can you provide? What does he need you to provide for him right now? And let that guide you. Does that make
sense? Try to provide ample time. Try to provide consistency so that, you know, he kind of knows what's expected. If it doesn't change too much from day to day, you know, there's not.
So let's just stop right there. So ample time and consistency. And over the next 2 weeks, what if you just focused on those two things?
We will do that. We've been focusing on that for a while, but, you know, I mean, I could try to really hone in on it more.
Well, let's talk for a little bit after the, if you can hang on, let's talk for a few minutes after.
Okay.
Figure out. I want to respect everybody else's time since we're coming right up on the closing time.
Okay. So, can I just share
Go ahead.
Can I just share that there was a period of time of almost a month and a half that my child, at either 9 or 10, I don't remember, slept in the clothes he was going to wear the next day because I couldn't take it anymore. Eventually he stopped, but
I love that.
He took a shower at night anyway. He took a shower at night anyway. He was like 9 or 10, so he wasn't all sweaty yet, you know. And
yeah.
Just slept in the clothes, and he was a little wrinkly going to school, but on the other hand, he was dressed, and he got up and went to the bathroom,
routinely do that all summer long.
Just gonna lay that out there as an last ditch effort. Now it doesn't look all it's not all pristine if it's a uniform, but I will say it was on school on time and
yeah,
good. I breezed him on the way out one day, but other than that,
perfect.
It's fine.
Yeah, I keep it separate.
After a while, he gets
in the car.
Sorry, I just had to put that in there.
No, I think it's great. Absolutely. I mean, that's what we're here for. I mean, part of why this works is that, you know, you hear what goes on in other people's houses and you realize that you're not alone. And you can also share what's worked for you, you know. And you know, with our kids with ADHD, you know, the carrot works much better than the stick, right? And so
yeah.
Every kid's got a different type of carrot they like. And I think I can't remember who I shared it with, but, you know, my sixth grader has had Krispy Kreme for breakfast almost every day this year because he has finally managed to get himself out of bed in time to get Krispy Kreme because that's his favorite breakfast. It's costing us a fortune, but you know what? It's working for us right now because he's getting to school on time, and that's the path of least resistance for us right now. So
yes. We had the Captain Crunch year.
Captain Crunch?
Captain Crunch year, yes. Anyway,
the Captain Crunch year. So yeah, it's fun to, you know, hear other solutions, other systems and structures that worked. And it's okay to be really creative and silly, right? So I love that he responds to games because I'm sure you're going to find some really fun things to go with, or that'll work with him. I can't wait to hear what you guys come up with.
Have him come up with the games.
Yeah. Even better. All right, so at the end of each session, we do the four questions. And it's, you know, what did I focus on or pay the most attention to today? Basically, you know, it can be today the whole day, or it can be just what we talked about in the past hour. What's my aha? What's a realistic action step for me to take? and how can I set myself up for success with this action? And just a friendly reminder, we're not going to hold you accountable unless you want us to for the whatever action step or whatever you choose to take aim on. So if you change your mind, totally fine. The point is that we're just working on the skill set, working on the process of being able to figure out what we want to take aim on and what's a realistic action step for us to take and how to be successful. Who wants to check out first?
Oh, I will, since I have it right here. It was ample time and consistency. Well, I can remember it.
Perfect. Yay. And how can we set you up for success, or how can you set yourself up for success?
Just trying to figure out how much that ample time is. I keep bumping it up by 10-minute increments each time, you know, and it never seems to be quite long enough, but we're working on it.
Just keep tracking it, right? Staying curious.
All right.
Carol, what'd you focus on today?
Well, we talked about what was getting me, I guess what was getting me stuck, and that would be getting triggered and getting upset, you know, sort of like falling back into an old routine. And so, you know, my aha was, this was kind of interesting, was that because one of the things that you said is that you got to, I recognized I was triggered. I knew I was upset because I immediately wanted to walk out of the room and just take a moment to regroup. And because I was upset. And my husband was with my son, and he's like, no, don't walk away. You need to come back. But now I came back because obviously I wanted to, you know, we wanted to work on what was going on and try to understand what the situation was with this whole Google Docs thing. But the aha for me was I was automatically stepping away, and that was my way of trying to calm down so that way I don't get pissed off anymore, you know. So that was a good, and I have to remind my husband now. I have to tell him that, you know, I walked away. You just give me a little more time.
Walk away.
Yeah, and it wasn't that I didn't want to address it anymore. It was that I needed time so that I could address it. That's one of my action steps, but I'm going to tell him that. And how can I set myself up for success with action? If the action is being triggered, that's the action that we're talking about?
Sure.
Or
the action
the
maybe, you know, talking to your husband.
Oh, the action is talking to you. Yeah. How can I set myself up for success? Well, that I actually talk to him, I guess. I think this would probably share what I learned today and say, listen, I just realized that, you know, by me walking away wasn't that I didn't want to help out Javier. It was just that I was upset. I needed a time out, because otherwise it would have been, you know, if I'm calm, I can do things better, so, and not act irrationally. So, yeah.
Calm, I can do things better and not act irrationally. Cool. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Marianne?
So the takeaway for me was, especially after the parent conferences, was to think about parenting positively, and that doesn't mean you have to agree with what's going on. You know, that
yep.
It's sort of I can be positive that my son can figure out a way to work on some of these things. And I'll be happy to help him when he figures out what he wants to do. So sort of being positive goes to laying it back to him and letting him feel like he has more say in what's going on. So that's sort of, I know that parenting positively is also about positive experiences, but for me, that's sort of that piece today. So realistic action step for me to take
about that, I guess, is he and I actually are going to a music festival this coming Thursday. He made a competition. And so in the car ride, I think I'd just like to hear things that he thinks, you know, hear him talk some more about what he thinks is going well, because there's some things that he's been wanting to talk to me about, and we haven't had time. So giving him that time to talk about what he's proud of would probably be a good realistic action step this week, because it's a very busy week with my conferences and his, so that
sure.
would be helpful.
Very nice to have time to connect.
Because it's hard not to just immediately go to the things that were difficult about conferences or consistent issues, because, you know, I'd love to go attack those right now, but I won't, so that'll be good. I think I'll just let that go and take this week as him to figure out which thing he'd like to tackle first. He has a week to figure it out. While he's figuring that out, then I just got to be real mindful about the time we do. I can plan that I know we have this week together that he can spend just talking about things he's doing well, because that will be helpful for me too.
Yeah, yeah, awesome. Sounds great. All right, guys, thank you so much. We're not meeting next week, but I think we do have a Lifeline call next week if you want to dial into that. And just check your emails for our next meeting. It should be 2 weeks from today. And as always, if you have any questions, you can post them in the Facebook group or just shoot us an email. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Night. Michelle, did you want to stay on?
Pardon?
Did you want to stay on?
I didn't know if I was supposed to or not, because you mentioned something about
it. It's up to you. I know what state where you are, so
I have a minute, or if you want to schedule another time, it's fine, too.
Okay.
My main thing, and my husband's not here this week, you know, is trying to diffuse. The biggest issue is that when I try to be calm, I try to be patient, try not to be triggered, and I'm better at that than at my husband. But then when my son starts talking back and starts being very disrespectful and saying things, and then it's just stuff like, quit talking over me. I will do it. You know, just kind of that type thing. I mean, he's not like crazy bad, but it's
right.
to the point where, though, that my husband will get upset because he hears the way he's talking and he's looking at him like, why don't you do something?
Right.
I need to discipline him, or I need to do something, you know, and I'm trying to keep my cool. I'm trying to keep, you know, something going forward and try to get something done, but it's trying to keep everybody from being triggered.
Sure, sure. No, I get it. And I can sense your frustration. I know it's really causing you guys to struggle, and I know you don't like it, because nobody does, right? When you guys talk about your approach, have you told him what you just told me?
Oh, I have, you know, but my husband feels that I don't do, that we're just going down a road where I'm not trying to discipline him or doing anything, you know, he doesn't see any kind of positive benefit, because we really haven't gotten one just yet.
Right.
<from all this. laughs> But he recognizes
that
if you get him upset, it's just going to take him twice as long to do anything, too. You know, and so we have to get out the door by a certain time. You know, we can't be late every single day.
Right.
And, but it just creates a lot of pressure when everyone's got to run around and do all these things. And, you know, and then, you know, inevitably my husband will be dragging my son down the steps like, you are going now. I don't care. You know, you're not going to sit there and comb your hair for 15 more minutes, or you're not going to do this. We're going now. That kind of type thing from happening. It's more often than not a meltdown of some sort every day, day in, day out. Different reasons. It's not always the same thing. We'll get one little thing, you know, accomplished, and then there'll be some other little nitpicky thing that just starts it all over again.
Is there anything going on at school?
He's perfect at school, believe it or not. Perfect. That's what we find amazing. We don't really say too much to the teachers, you know, but kind of say, you know, how is his behavior? Is he respectful, you know? And they're like, oh, yes, he did. And he, he went to a Catholic school, so he's learned how he needs to behave. And he's in a special school right now for dyslexia. And he's in a very small class environment. He gets a lot of one-on-one attention. But, you know, I would have to say he earns pretty good marks in school. I mean, he listens, he participates, he does what's expected of him. He's not a shy kid. He's kind of a big kid, and he's very athletically inclined, and so he attracts other big kids and playing sports. And, you know, if anything, he would be, you know, a little rough and tumble with some of the smaller kids, but he also has a protective side to him, and he tries to take them under his wing. But he's generally considered a leader and well-liked and gets along with everyone.
When you talk with him about what he needs to be successful in the morning, what does he say?
More time, but he's given 45 minutes at this point. I mean,
okay.
How much time does a 10-year-old need?
Well,
he's not even eating breakfast here. We're eating breakfast in the car.
Right. What takes the most time? Do you have I was up late last night. Do you have an impression of what it is that he's spending the most time on?
It's a different thing every day. He'll just get distracted and do something else and not what he's supposed to be doing.
Okay. I feel like we're missing something. I don't know what it is, though.
I feel like he gets upset if you're on him every minute to get something done, but nothing gets done unless you're on him every minute. And I think that's part of the reason why at school he's got, you know, it's a very small classroom. There's two teachers in there. You know, there's no way of escaping and be able to just go off and do your own thing. He's directed into what he needs to do constantly. You know, and if we try to provide him a little bit more of an atmosphere that because he has such a rigid schedule and he has so much that he has to do, and to give him a little more leeway here,
mm-hmm.
so he can relax somewhat, but I guess he just can't operate within that environment. He just, maybe I need to make it like a really rigid schedule and try and say, okay, we have to be up this, and this time we have to do this, and this time we have to do it. I haven't gone that far yet, but maybe
uh-huh.
that's the next step. I need to try to see how he responds, whether he just really needs to be on that type of a, really reined in that closely.
And that's what it's like at school. It's, you know, it's every 10 minutes or every whatever. He knows exactly what he's supposed to do next. It's the routine.
Well, I think that they're constantly guiding him because there are a lot of kids. There are 10 kids that are just like him that are all together, you know, and there's two teachers with them. So it's not like that they're left, like, a lot of time to just do whatever. But you could ponder that for a while. We could get that at another time if you would come up with any suggestions. I don't want to hold you up.
No. It's not.
Either.
I mean, it's not about suggestions because I mean, you're a smart lady. I have no doubt that you guys have tried all kinds of things. Let's find a time to chat maybe later in the week if that's okay with you. And just see if
okay.
we can kind of dig down a little bit and get to the bottom of at least one piece of this. Because, you know, I can sense that you're frustrated. I don't want you to be frustrated with our sessions either. And it just sounds like maybe we just need a little extra direction or just a little, I'm not even sure exactly what it is, but maybe some more understanding about where we're hoping to go.
Well, I guess the concerning, the alarming thing is I understand that, you know, it's a certain way that his brain works, you know, and that he doesn't, things don't register with him, and it's more difficult for him to transition from this to that, you know, and he doesn't respond to, like, negative stuff. He is kind of reward-driven, but, you know,
sure.
they seem to be short-lived, you know, and so we're always constantly having to find a new reward system because he gets bored with the other one and, you know, it doesn't start to work any longer. But
yeah.
he
it's this respect thing and how he started talking to us. My husband's frankly embarrassed. He's never done it. He's spoken to us that way in front of other people, you know, and if you try to, you know, glare at him or give him a reprimand, you know, in public, he's all worried that someone, you need to lower your voice, you need to whisper, I mean, they can't hear you. And he's very, you know, very aware of appearances. But in the home environment with my husband and I, it's on. You know, he's just terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that, you know, for a 10-year-old to be talking to you that way, that concerns me. And
have you said
I
that?
I feel like it's something that needs to be nipped in the bud and just not quite sure how to do that the right way. Paddling him doesn't do anything.
Yeah, no, I mean, it might work for a little while, but it doesn't work over time. And it has a lot of complications later in life, unfortunately. No, I understand. That's a critical area for you guys. And I remember when we were talking a couple of weeks ago, that we kept coming back to that. I think we can definitely...
I feel like if I can change that, then I can change the dynamic with his father. You know, that he won't get so upset with them, you know, and then maybe we could all have that chance to be a little bit more even keel and not be as triggered and, you know, concentrate on other things. But
okay. That makes sense. So that's what we need to really take aim on, is the talking back and that fear in both of you that if he talks back in public, that embarrassment, right? And that story that's going to be in your head about what other people are thinking about your son or you as a parent?
I'm not so concerned about that. My husband is. He's concerned when his family was just here, you know, that he was going to have an episode or say things or be that way in front of his... But he seems to, you know, he'll carry on, like, out of the room, out of earshot. He doesn't want grandma to hear that, too. But it doesn't stop him, but he'll tone it down some.
Yeah. Well, that shows good self-awareness. So he knows what triggers you.
And I don't think it's a stretch to feel like, you know, your child shouldn't talk to you that way.
Oh my gosh,
I mean, it's more than just not, you know, I'm being embarrassed if someone else were to hear that. It's just wrong, and he needs to be corrected, you know, and he's just not saying anything or I guess it's just how to approach it.
Yeah.
You know, there's that you can ignore and walk away. I've tried to do that and go in another room. Of course, that drives them crazy, and then he starts, you know, screaming, Ma, you know, and being crazy, and that doesn't accomplish anything either. So just
trying to find
an approach
basically.
That I haven't thought of.
Yeah. Worry not. We can figure something out, I promise. I'm going to send you a link, and we'll find a time to talk. And then once we've gotten a few things figured out, then we'll loop your husband in. Does that sound okay?
Okay.
Cool. Hang in there.
Look
forward to taking him on this week. Ample time and consistency.
Yeah, we will try to do that. You know, and if we can just get the, you know, just like it's even like getting a home and getting the homework done, getting dinner eaten, and getting the homework done, and then getting to bed. And if he could get, because we're consistently getting to bed late, so then we're not wanting to get up, and it has a whole snowball effect that.
So it's the whole thing.
I think once one or two pieces solved, we'll solve a whole lot of things.
I agree.
Figuring
out
how to get
those. Right. That's yeah. Let's schedule some time when I'm not brain dead.
Myself as well.
Huh?
I said I understand.
That'd be great. No, and no, it's all gonna be okay. Okay, what you're describing is very normal, and it happens in every ADHD home. and I know your son doesn't have an ADHD diagnosis. So I'm just saying, in homes with complex kids. And even in homes where kids have no diagnosis or no challenges whatsoever, some of these are just normal power struggles or parent-child struggles. And we just need to figure out the technique that's going to work best for you as a parent and for your son and help you both be successful. And I have no doubt we can do that.
Okay. Well, have a good evening. I appreciate your time and effort.
Oh, absolutely. No, I appreciate your time. I'm glad you dialed in. Hang in there. We'll talk soon, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye.